Maybe I can correct it during testimony.
Senate Committee on Labor, February 4th, 1985, 8 o'clock a.m., hearing room B, public hearing.
Before we start the public hearing, I wanted to call to your attention some documents on your desk that have been given to you for your information. You have in front of you some information that we requested during the overview presentations to the agencies, and that includes a copy of the response we received from the Attorney General on the issue of the provision of legal services for the Bureau of Labor. We also have information from the Employment Division that we had requested, as you may recall, concerning the federal budget cuts and the effects on programs, the Job Corps program, the Job Training Partnership Act, and WIN. I know someone, I think it was Senator Otto, had concerns about the Job Corps because it's in his district. We also have the Worker Compensation Board budgets for 1981 and 1983. And we have the third annual report that Occupational Safety and Health Advisory Council is mandated to give to us. So those are, if you want to take these back to your office to review, that would be fine. If you want to keep them in your files, you can leave them here and they'll be kept in your file in the Labor Committee office. I wanted to indicate to the committee also that on Wednesday and Friday we've scheduled hearings on the DDT bill, Senate Bill 57, and also in your information before you is the task force report, which you may want to review. Those of you that weren't on the task force may want to review before we have hearings. I want to also alert all the members that the deadline for the introduction of committee bills is February 19th. So if you have bills that you want the committee to consider for introduction, I would appreciate if you could get them to us. The last day that the committee would be able to consider them would be February 15th. So if you do have bills you'd like to have introduced, I would like you to get in touch with Cheyenne. Also, I wanted to report that after the joint committee meeting Friday with the House Committee on Labor, we did, Director Brown and Mr. Whitaker, who's the head of the Governor's Task Force on Worker Compensation, and Representative Shiprack and myself did meet after the meeting, and we are moving on. We're recommending a firm to be hired for the independent actuarial work that is amenable to all parties, and I might say I'm pleased that we're able to move in the direction that all parties seem to want to be to get that work done and get the independent analysis done that we'll have before us. Today we're going to have five bills that are going to have hearings. These are bills from the Bureau of Labor. They include Senate Bill 42, 43, and 44, which concern the Apprenticeship and Training Division. Hearing on Senate Bill 41, which is the concerns of change in the public accommodation law. And Senate Bill 38, which concerns the Wage and Hour Division. We're going to start and open the public hearing on, I think we'll do three at a time here, Senate Bill 42, 43, and 44, and I'll ask Cheyenne to summarize those before we open them.
I didn't hear.
Senate Bill 42, 43, and 44 concerning the apprenticeship and training program. The statute, ORS Chapter 660, is included in the overview materials which have been placed before you for all those who left them with the committee. It's in the very back of that black book. The policy of this chapter sets forth that the state should encourage apprenticeship and training programs through voluntary cooperation of management, labor, and government, and provides for several types of committees and councils to oversee the program, including a state apprenticeship and training council, local joint committees or trade committees, state joint apprenticeship committees, And there are also references to community college training program advisory committees. This bill basically proposes that a definition of the term employee be added to be applicable apparently throughout the entire chapter, and would require that an employee be a person employed in or active in the applicable trade. You each have a bill file for Senate Bill 42, and the text is in the bold at the bottom of the first page.
Okay, we'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 42, and we have on a sign-up sheet, we have just two individuals, Marilyn Koffel and Bill Anton, that would like to testify.
Good morning, Senator Hendrickson, members of the committee. I'm Marilyn Koffel from the Bureau of Labor Industries, and with me today is Bill Anton, who's the administrator of the Apprenticeship and Training Division. Senate Bill 42 is designed to add a definition of employee to Chapter 660. A definition of employee is the only specific area that is not mentioned and defined in Chapter 660, and we wanted to get one in there that would refer to employee membership on joint apprenticeship training committees. As you might remember, there's 175 committees within Oregon that monitor 520 apprenticeship programs, and a committee's membership is comprised of one-half employer representation and one-half employee representation. And under the present system, if an employee is nominated for membership to a JATC, a challenge can be made as to whether or not he or she is indeed the correct person to represent the employees on a JATC. And if any challenge is made to the employee nominated, the process under 660 refers it in its final form to the Apprenticeship and Training Council. And since the Apprenticeship and Training Council only meets quarterly, several problems result. There's a waste of time and money, and because a full committee does not exist, no re-rating of apprentices can take place. And in addition, the apprenticeships are unable, due to the lack of a quorum on the committee, to take any state licensing exam, and that costs them dollars out of their pocket. And as the committee might remember, the Apprenticeship and Training Council is appointed by the governor of the state of Oregon, and for a period of lasting 4 years, and there are 10 members. And we feel that due to this fact as well, it would be very valuable to our processing of the apprenticeship folks if we could have a clear definition of employee under 660. We feel it would add a real consistency and less room for controversy under the present system. I'll be glad to answer any questions of the committee, and those that I can't answer, I'm sure that Mr. Anton can.
Well, maybe it's because it's so early on Monday morning or something. It's not clear to me how this clarifies or expands the definition of employee. Do you want to?
Okay. I think I'll
read your testimony.
Okay. I'll let Mr. Anton respond to that, if you would.
Senator Hinson, there is absolutely no definition now, as I'm sure you're aware, in 660. What we wanted to do was to, there's a lot of different interpretation as to what an employee is. We wanted to at least bring the beginning of the definition into 660 so that we could then deal with that in an appropriate manner across all committees.
Well, it looks here like you could actually have a person that was an employer if they were active in an applicable trade be considered employee. It says any person employed in or active in the applicable trade. Or does that make any difference for the purposes of the council?
Senator Hendrickson, if you'll see in the next subsection, sub 10, it does define employer. And I don't believe that they contradict each other.
See, we have, Senator Henderson, we have committees now where there are employee representatives on the committee who are active in the trade but are not employed in the trade, and we did not want to prejudice those folks in any way.
Well, could you give a concrete example of what you're talking about and how this change in the law would benefit you
and some of those folks that are not actively working with certain committees?
Well, for example, in a committee that would have representatives from a union, The union business agent, for example, is active in the trade, but is not employed particularly in the trade. And we would not want to exclude that type of individual being able to seat himself or herself on a committee.
So presently they can't serve on committees?
Presently there is no way to define what an employee is, and then they're subject, because of that, to challenges from other committee members or from the public.
Madam Chair.
Senator Stargardt, then Senator Jernstedt,
please. Let me take another run at this. Give me an example of the basis of a challenge as to whether, as you say here, a person is the correct person to represent employees.
Senator Henderson, Senator Starkovich, I'm not understanding.
Okay. Would I want to challenge a someone who is nominated for membership to a committee, and what typically is the basis of that challenge? Is it that they are not an employee? I guess I should ask first, how many challenges do you get?
Currently, we're in the process of overcoming one challenge. The challenge takes the effect that, in this particular case, a business agent for an organized group of employees has been challenged as to that individual's eligibility to sit as an employee, a member of a committee.
Okay.
And that's why we want to leave active.
Okay. Now, if I understood the chair's point, though, an employer, while it's defined in subsection 10, could still be included under the definition of employee as it is written. I mean, you are using the words "or active in" to encompass, say, business agents, but that phrase could also mean any person employing the services of an apprentice, which is the definition of employer.
I see.
Did you have a good time?
I see.
That the definition of employee could include employer, as it's written.
Senator Hendrickson, perhaps we could see if we could get some further clarification on our language. I see what you mean now. It was something that bypassed all of us.
Well, I'm not sure if that's how. I'm just saying it's a potential ambiguity there in terms of. Senator Jernstedt, did you have a question?
Well, I think mine has been cleared up. I think the phrase was needed, or active in. You could be an employee as a bricklayer, and if you weren't working right at that time, you really technically wouldn't be an employee. This would help clear that up. So I'm just going to add that to it.
That's a good point. Are there any other comments?
Madam Chair.
Senator McCoy.
Yes. Under this 660, wouldn't apprentice be the same thing as employee?
Wouldn't apprentice be the same thing as employee? No.
Seems like that might be the better place to amend it, or a representative, or something like that.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Do you have a comment on that? What the difference would be between?
I don't see an apprentice and an employee are one and the same things. Perhaps Mr. Antone could clarify that. I see them as two distinct categories. Could you comment on that, please, Senator McCoy?
Well, you don't question Senator. Senator wishes to comment.
No, I asked Bill if he would comment on it for Senator McCoy. I'm sorry, my throat is going out on me this morning.
Senator McCoy, an apprentice is, in fact, an employee. That's absolutely correct, sir.
Mm-hmm. For the purposes of this section, it'd be the same thing, wouldn't it?
Just apprentice. Well, but that's what I was saying.
That's true.
No big deal. Senator Otto, did you have a question?
I have a question. Why do we have the emergency clause?
Senator Otto, I think that because we had had problems in this area, that we wanted to have this instituted as quickly as possible. That was my understanding when I discussed it with Mr. Antone.
Another question.
Senator Otto?
If this bill does not pass, is the state going to be harmed a great deal? The point I'm getting at is this. I have a thing against emergency clauses. And I'm sure that if this bill did pass, there'd be no one that would want to refer it to the people. But when we go ahead and attach an emergency clause to a piece of legislation, we are effectively denying the people of the state of Oregon the right to refer legislation. And that's my big hang-up about the emergency clause. I was asked to sign on a bill the other day to change the name of the blind school to the Mary Rieke Grace Peck Visual Center. Had the emergency clause. That's an abuse of the system. And I could probably be supportive of the bill if the emergency clause were deleted. I don't think there's an emergency.
Senator Hendricks and Senator Otto, I certainly would have no objection to the deletion of the emergency clause.
I just have some other questions in terms of this bill. The purpose generally of these apprenticeship councils are to represent labor and management, as I understand it. And how have the, I think there's been business agents that have served before. How have they, under what existing definition were they appointed under?
Go ahead.
Senator Hendrickson, right now we find ourselves here in Oregon in a state of flux, in as much as many of our committees that ever since there's been an apprenticeship program have gone down the road as a unit, and now we find that employers are decertifying themselves, are doing a number of things that have not taken place in the past. And in order to ensure the integrity of the apprenticeship program and to ensure that the apprentice is cared for and that their rights are fully protected with equal representation of both employees and employers, now we find ourselves in a position where we feel it very important to have a working definition.
So in other words, nobody paid much attention that there was no category for them. They
right.
just served. Okay, also, how is an applicable trade, the language that's used here, different from apprenticeable occupation? Or is it?
What would you
do? There is a definition 3
of apprenticeable occupation. Mm-hmm. I really think that they, excuse me, Senator Hendrickson, in my understanding, I think that they would be interchangeable, so perhaps it ought to be apprenticeable.
And then my third question is this new definition, do you intend this to apply throughout the ORS 660?
Yes.
And have you analyzed it from that point of view?
Yes, we sent the bill over to we had it reviewed by Mr. Antone's staff, and we sent it over to Department of Justice to cross-check it for us as well.
Well, I hope they didn't charge you too much for this one. I think it's going to take a little revision.
At least they did it.
Senator Otto?
In the last session of the legislature, we passed legislation dealing with apprentices. It said to serve on the committee, you had to be a member of an apprenticeable trade. Has that rule been followed that long?
Senator Hendrickson, Senator Otto, that was in regards to the State Apprenticeship Council.
Right.
And to the best of my knowledge, it has, sir. The governor and his office are the ones that do that particular bit of our business. Mm-hmm. And to my knowledge, I think there have been two appointments since that legislation was passed, and that both of those met that test.
Good.
Okay, if there's no further testimony, I'll ask if there's anybody in the audience that wishes to testify on Senate Bill 42. If not, we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 42. I would suggest to Marilyn or to Bill that perhaps you work with Cheyenne, I think, and get some, before we set this up for work session, to have some language that maybe would hone in a little bit more on the problem that you're trying to address, because I do feel this definition might be a little too broad and it may not solve your problem. Is there any further?
No, I'll just make a little comment that Cheyenne is not going to get the same kind of pay.
No, Cheyenne doesn't get the same rate of pay that the AG does. We may have a comparable worth problem right here. We'll open up the public hearing on Senate Bill 43. Yeah, Cheyenne will keep this here.
Again, there's a copy of the bill in your file folder. Senate Bill 43 also amends the same chapter of the ORS 660. One of the requirements of this chapter is that every apprentice and employer has to enter into a written agreement under 660.020, and every agreement after a certain date in 1981 has to include certain items, and the statute sets out signatures, counts and committee addresses, duration of the program, and so forth. The bill proposes that a statement concerning what constitutes good cause for termination of the agreement after a probationary period by the training committee, and specifies as examples failure to go to work, non-attendance at training, failure to submit progress reports, and so on. The new language is made a part of ORS 660.060, which outlines the contents of the agreement. A statement was received from the fiscal office of no fiscal impact anticipated from this bill.
All right, we'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 43. Is this the same random sheet?
Is there a separate signup sheet, Tom? Marilyn, is there a separate signup sheet on this one, or is there your name on it?
Madam Chair.
Senator Starkovich?
I'm impressed at the speed with which the Bureau of Labor and Industries responded to Senator Otto's desire not to have emergency clauses. This one doesn't have an emergency clause.
That is very responsible. Awful lucky. Maybe better that one was the second one. Okay. I assume then that is a sign-up sheet. We only have the Bureau. It's here today to testify. Do you want to go through this one, Marilyn?
Yes. For the record, I'm Marilyn Coffle, Bureau of Labor and Industries. And with me is Bill Anton from the Bureau as well. Senate Bill 43 is our attempt to define good cause for cancellation of an apprenticeship agreement under 660.060. We presently don't have any definition. Our proposed definition would include, but is not limited to, failure to report to work, non-attendance at related training, failure to submit work progress reports, and a lack of response to committee citations. The only current language that we have right now would provide that the apprentice receive due notice and have an opportunity to correct his or her behavior, and that the committee provide written notice to the Bureau in regard to any action taken in regard to the apprentice. Right now, good cause could be constituted to mean just about anything, and we would like to prevent some problems in this area before they arise. We are having several new programs that we talked about in our overview that are being developed, such as those for stagehands, environmental technicians, numerical control, and others. We believe it would be valuable to everyone involved in the apprenticeship program, the employer, the apprentice, the training committees, and the Bureau, to have a definition that would give us a statewide standard. In addition, if we had a definition, we have been advised that would probably help us in terms of being involved in tort cases. Having good cause would also just simply provide an opportunity for less misunderstandings to occur, and in regard to cancellation of apprenticeship agreements.
Bill, do you have anything further to add to that?
Madam Chair.
Questions that are ambulance under health?
If I read the definition correctly, then is it my understanding that if an apprentice just fails to show for work, it is not enough of a good cause, correct? But he must also refuse to attend related training, submit work reports, etc.
Senator Hendrickson, Senator Hamby, that is one of the reasons.
Yes, but in other words, he must have more than just non-attendance at work. Am I reading it, or am I not reading it correctly? Which includes, and then it goes on to identify, not only not reporting for work, but not reporting for related training as well.
Senator Hendrickson,
can it be interpreted in that manner?
Senator Hamby, the way I interpret it, mm-hmm. is, I guess, the only way I can respond, is that it can be one or more of those reasons. It does not have to be all inclusive.
Well, I agree, Senator Hamby, maybe it should be ors after them rather than commas, correct. Which indicate uh-huh. And. Maybe we can, okay. Senator Howe, did you?
Are you having problems in this area? Or you just anticipate problems in this area?
Senator Hinkson, Senator Hack, currently we have no problems in this area. Again, we are adding a large number of new programs, new committees, areas again where we have not had the long history of apprenticeship involvement with employers. We want to ensure that the apprentice is treated equally and fairly anywhere within the state. So if, in answer directly to your question, sir, yes, it would be an anticipation.
One of the things that kind of, one of the other side of the ill effects of making out the definition is that you narrow that threshold there pretty close that have to fit with your definition. Right now, good cause, if it's disagreed with, you've got a vehicle to go through and mitigate that definition. And then it's wider than if you have a definition or that kind of determination in law. And I just wonder the justification for narrowing that, because of a whole wide variety of apprenticeship programs, if we really want to define good cause.
Senator Hendrickson? Yes.
Senator Houck, I think what we were trying to do in this definition is to leave room for the area you're talking about by including the phrase, but not limited to. We were aware that by setting any definition down in statute, yes, we would perhaps narrow the scope, but we felt that if we left but not limited to in there, it would allow the flexibility for different circumstances.
Are you finishing
now? Yeah, well, the same comment that I'd have by putting the last phrase, what's the meter definition? We're right back to square one, really, with a lot more words than the law.
Senator Starkey?
Well, that was my next point, that with that phrase, you really have an open-ended definition. I don't know where this gets you that you aren't already. What's the appeals process for, say, an apprentice who is, suspended, where the agreement is suspended or canceled or terminated for good cause? It reads here that due notice has to be given to the apprentice and a reasonable opportunity for correction with written notice to the apprentice. But suppose the apprentice believes that he or she was not given a reasonable opportunity for correction, wasn't given written notice. What's the appeals procedure for that apprentice?
Senator Hendrickson, Senator Starkovich, the first avenue that is open now would be for the apprentice to make contact with the apprenticeship consultant, and we would try to intercede if there was a problem, or at least to give clarity. The next step would be for them to enter into court under the EEO and other requirements.
Has there ever been a case where there has been an appeal from the apprentice?
Senator Hinkson, Senator Starkovich, not during my tenure.
Mr. Hanton, one of the things I don't understand is why the Bureau just doesn't use their power to make rules to handle something like this. Then you've got the flexibility. Was it the Attorney General's opinion you needed a statutory change?